today, we're going to be talking about Jesus and the work that he did, because Jesus did have a job. The last few weeks, we've been talking about Jesus and this picture in his life that we see when he's 12 years old and he's at the temple. He's a very intelligent boy, obviously. He's very talented. He's good at speaking with adults. He's able to win friends. Says that he grew in favor with God and man. So I wonder if his parents had those same sorts of questions. What do I do with this child that obviously God, angels have spoken to us about this child's future? This child is going to be someone special, but what do you do with a really intelligent, talented child, and how do you train them? Some of talking about this idea of work today kind of goes in that direction of, well, what do we see in Jesus' life? Because we see this time when he's 12 years old, and the next time we see Jesus, he's around 30 years old. So what happens for that 18 years, about, that's in between there? What was Jesus doing? How was he continuing to develop, even though he already seems to have a good understanding of the scriptures at that time? What did he do? In Mark chapter 6, verse 1 through 3, we're told that Jesus has already started his ministry. He's going around, he's being a great public speaker, and he's doing miracles, and he comes back to his hometown, and he's speaking there, and the people are all amazed by Jesus, and they say, wait a second, where did this man, Jesus, get this teaching? How did he get such wisdom? Who gave it to him, and where did he get the power to do miracles? Isn't he just the carpenter we know? Mary's son mentions his brothers, and don't his sisters still live here in town? So the people in Jesus' town, hometown of Nazareth, all they knew about him, it seemed to be, was, isn't this just the carpenter? Jesus, for about 18 years, apparently, was a carpenter, was a worker. Now, the Greek word of it is tekton. And so some people, if they care about scholarly things, are like, well, yes, a tekton could be a carpenter, but a tekton could also be a stonemason. If you were a tekton with stone, you built with stone. The word pretty much just means a worker, or a worker with their hands, a builder. Some people have said, well, Jesus was probably very intelligent. Maybe he was an architect, and that was the type of tekton he was. Some others have simply said, well, that probably meant he took kind of whatever day jobs he could get. He just worked with his hands, and today if he can do carpentry, he does carpentry. Tomorrow if he's working at this other site, he does that. We're not completely sure, but a carpenter makes sense. In another verse, a similar parallel one in this in Matthew, instead of saying Jesus the carpenter, it says, well, isn't he the son of a tekton, the son of a carpenter, Joseph? So the thing that at least we can say is at that time, very commonly, you do the job that your father did. Your father is a baker, you become a baker. Your father is a carpenter, you become a carpenter. And often that was how families worked, is your dad trains you in what he does. But it's still interesting to me, because 2 weeks ago, if you were here, you heard a bit about the school system, that at that time, from the ages of 6 to 10, you're doing one kind of school, and if you're a really good student, then you get to go on from 10 to 14 years old, you're studying more stuff, and then if you're a really good student at the end of that, what they would do is, if you were top of the class, the cream of the crop, you could follow a rabbi. So you would go to this rabbi, and you would try to impress him with your skills because you want this rabbi to choose you. Similar to now what we do with universities, where you try to put your best face forward and you try to say, hey, this is why you would want me to be studying from you, because I'm going to be a good student. And then the rabbi gets to choose, well, yes, I want you to be my student, or no, I don't. But we don't see, despite how talented and how intelligent Jesus was, it doesn't seem like Jesus followed a rabbi. Jesus didn't become one of these guys who just threw himself into academia of the time. Jesus became this guy who worked with his hands, and that's for about 18 years. Now, for those of you who do your math, we had 12 years of Jesus growing up, and then from about the age of 30 till 33 is when he does his public ministry. You put those together, that's about 15 years. So those 15 years of his life is still shorter than this 18 years of just being a guy who works. Was that a waste of time? For Jesus to not be known as someone special, just to be a man who works. And my recommendation is that no, he was not. As Steve spoke about last week, timing is so very important in our lives. Where he said, you have to know your identity. To know who you are, you need to know whose you are, that you are God's child, that you need to know what your purpose is. And Jesus surely, he knew what his purpose was. We see him continually talking about it. But you also have to know your timing. And for Jesus, he said, my time hadn't come yet to be doing this public ministry. For now, I'm supposed to be working. And he did. And so don't in your own life neglect the power of what God is doing right now in your work or in your studies. I heard a pastor named Tim Keller say this. He might not be the first person to say it. I just know that he at least was one of them, where he said, work matters to God, and God matters to work. Hopefully you'll realize that in your own life. You see, work is a good thing. Let me try to biblically show this to you. If you have your Bible, you hop back to the very beginning, the book of Genesis. It's the front part. Genesis chapter 1, there are a couple things that we find out about God. One is that God speaks. He's a communicator. We see that God is creating things. And we see that God is a worker. 6 days, he worked. On the seventh day, he rested. Maybe you've heard that. So things that we find in God's identity is he's a communicator, he's a creator, and God is a worker. That's part of his identity. That's part of what he does. God works. Work is a good thing. But it's not just stopping there. At the end of that first chapter, it says that God decides to create humanity, to create people. And he says, let us make man in our own image. And so in the image of God, he made them, male and female, he made them. So humans are supposed to be this image of God. And what's the image that we've already been given of God so far? That he communicates, that he creates, that he works. So we would expect humans to then have these three characteristics. Well, right after God creates humanity, then he gives these commands or these like marching orders. This is what you go do. The first one, be fruitful and multiply. Another version makes it a lot simpler. Go have children. God is saying, okay, I have created, but then these people, Adam and Eve, are supposed to be taking part in that creative process as well. The next thing that God says, fill the earth and subdue it. I'm going to give you control over the plants, the animals, the birds of the air, the fish of the sea. In chapter 2, we see God puts Adam in the garden and says, now take care of this garden. So what has God just done? He has just given humanity work. And it was good. Work is a good thing. He gave that because that's part of what his nature is before man starts screwing things up by our separation from God by sin. And so first they start to distrust God, and then they decide to disobey. That this command that God has given, you can eat from any fruit of any tree you want, just not this one. And they say, you know what? I'm going to go for that one. And they disobey. And then they distance themselves from God. They try to run, they hide, they cover themselves. And I see that happen over and over. That first we distrust God, then we disobey God, and then we try to distance ourselves. In the case of Adam and Eve, after they have done this, then God says to them, okay, the game is going to somewhat change. Here's the thing. He first speaks to the woman. He says, you will have children. You will be part of this creating, but you will have greater pain in childbirth. You will have children, but you will have pain in it. He says to the man, you will continue to work, but it will be painful toil. There's going to be thorns, and there's going to be thistles, and you're going to have to work with the sweat of your brow. You will have work, but you will have pain. You will have children, but you will have pain. And this thing that was meant to be good, work, is then made out to be this kind of bad, struggling thing. If you look through the Old Testament, especially for those who are going to be reading Proverbs, that are doing that along with us, or the book of Ecclesiastes, a man named Solomon, he speaks very well of work several times. And he says, hey, a good thing for man to do is work. So we see good examples of work. But I want to look in the New Testament with Jesus. We've already seen that Jesus worked what would be considered just a regular job. What sounds kind of like a high theological concept is that Jesus was the second Adam. I'll try to make it kind of simpler, though. It's like Jesus resets humanity. God had created man, we have Adam, and we have these things that are good, but then it got screwed up along the way with the separation. And then when Jesus comes around, Jesus is like the second chance that everything goes back to normal. Everything goes back to the way that it was supposed to be. Well, how do we see that? John chapter 5, verse 17, we see Jesus speaking, and he talks about God and the identity of God. He says, "My Father is always working, even to this very hour." What did we see in Genesis 1? God is a worker. Now with Jesus, Jesus said, God is at work. God is a worker. He follows this with the next statement, "And I, too, am working." So Jesus puts this back in place again. God is a worker, and I, in his image, I work as well, and work is good. Jesus saw work as a good thing. I was reading a book by a guy named Brian Houston. He's the pastor of Hillsong Church, and he pointed to a verse in a way that I hadn't paid attention to before, I guess. I went, oh, that's a really good thought. It may sound like a contradiction, but do you know that hard work can actually nourish you? Hard work can actually rejuvenate you. John chapter 4, verse 34, Jesus says, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work." My food is to do work. It may sound like a contradiction. It sounds kind of crazy at first because most of us have this idea that work drains you and drains you and drains you, and then you have to take some time, and then I'm back to normal, and then work drains you and drains you and drains you. But for Jesus, he said, I actually get good energy. I get my food from work. Now, please don't think that I'm trying to encourage people to be workaholics in this as well, because Jesus did take time to rest. And we see that both of those are at work. That's part of God's character. God worked for 6 days. He rested the seventh day. It's still part of God's character, and we'll talk about that probably in a week to come. Maybe we need to change our picture on what work is, and maybe work isn't a bad thing. Work is a good thing. Work is also worship. Colossians chapter 3, verse 17, and also verses 22 to 25, they're great verses that talk about work. It says, "Whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all to the glory of God. In your work, be worshiping." And he's telling workers, like, do your best, not just so that your boss has favor on you. Don't just do your work so that other people see it and go, isn't he such a good worker? Do it as though serving the Lord and not man, because you know that God will reward those. So again, we see work is worship. What we do in our work is meant to be connecting with God. Various people connect with God better in different ways. And I think part of that is because God has this kind of big character that we find different ways of connecting with him. God is a worker. God is a creator. God is a communicator. God is an artist. He has all of these things about him. And so I see people who like art that when they're drawing something or when they're singing, they feel like they're really connecting with God. My roommate in college, he was a nature guy. If you just have him start walking, like take a hike up a mountain, God is there for him automatically. And that was a really great way for him to connect with God. And I read a blog by a guy named Donald Miller, and he said this, where it's just, I went, this makes sense. He said, "I connect with God by working. I literally feel an intimacy with God when I build my company. I worship God every day through my work. It's a blast." If God is a worker, then we should be able to connect with God in that sort of a way. God is not solely concerned about what happens on Sunday, but he wants to be relevant to all of our life. And so why not our work? It takes up about a third of our days often. So why wouldn't God want to be a part of that? A different man named Martin Luther, he referred to the work that we do as being the masks of God. And the way he kind of said it was that when you look in the Bible and see all these things where God promises that he'll take care of people, God promises he'll provide food, God promises he'll provide water or protection, what are those things but meant to be ways in which we also live that out? And so he says that when we whatever we're doing in the garden or in the city, in government, it's sort of like child's play to God. He could do it all by himself, but he chooses to use us. He chooses to be hidden behind us as the mask. And so when people pray, "Our Father in heaven, give us today our daily bread," then the farmer who grows that grain is part of the mask of God that provides the answer to that prayer. The baker who makes it, the person who just stocks it in Albert Heijn, they are getting to be a mask of God. That when people pray for protection, men and women who are in the government or policemen, you get to be a chance to be the mask of God in that. That's what we're able to be and what God wants us to be. So let me give you just a few examples from my life of how I've seen that at work with mine. I have not had glorious jobs all of my life. When I was in university, I worked part-time at the cafeteria. So I'm serving pizza to people, I'm cleaning floors, I'm making omelets for people in the morning, I'm making sure that there's enough cereal, all of that. And it wasn't specifically exciting, but I was getting to be a mask of God to help provide for people's food, as well as working with the coworkers. Because there were three guys that were all from India, did not grow up with any sort of background of God apart from maybe something Hindu where there's multiple gods. And we get to have conversations about who is Jesus. And then they decide to go along with me to watch the movie The Passion of the Christ, which is all about Jesus' death and then his resurrection that follows that. And by getting to work, I got to be involved in their lives and be a picture of God to them. There was another guy who worked there, a little bit older, probably came from a poor neighborhood and a ghetto kind of background, because within the first few days, we're back in the kitchen, and he grabs my shoulder from the back and pushes me up against the walk-in freezer, and he has a meat thermometer in his hand. It's one of those ones where it's like a long thing that you poke into the middle to see if the chicken is done in the middle or the turkey or whatever. So he pushes me up against the wall, has this kind of poking into my back, and is threatening me. Now, I'm not sure when you know you've reached this point in your friendship that you can threaten someone and it's really okay. I didn't feel like we were at that point in our friendship at that time. He apparently did. But I got to become friends with this man over weeks and months. And instead of being someone who thought, "You're just a good-for-nothing kind of thug guy who's never going to be anything good because all you know how to do is to threaten people," instead, he got to see someone who treated him as a brother, as a fellow human, and got to talk about Christ with him. I got to have some other really exciting jobs while I was in university as well. During the summer, I got to work at a cat food repackaging plant. What that means is this. We would get those cans of cat food in like packages of 24. You have to open this package of 24 and take the cans out of cat food and put them into a box of 18. Close that box so that they could sell that. Because apparently the cat didn't like the presentation of the 24 pack. So we need to make sure the cat gets the 18 pack. Those of you who know that I am much closer to being called a dog lover than a cat lover will know that that kind of a job does not leave you going home at the end of the day going, "I have really done something worthwhile with my life." But I did get to do something worthwhile with my life. Getting to talk with the guy there whose mind was honestly so blown out on drugs, who told me about living with his lesbian roommate, who also seemed to be his drug dealer. But we got to talk about faith and life and what God does in that. The guy who was a Wiccan, who is a type of witch, didn't really seem to know what he was doing. He just thought, "Oh, this is kind of cool," but didn't realize what he was dangerously getting himself into. And we could talk about faith. Or the woman who was a single mother was a Christian. I don't remember if it was that her husband left her or her husband died unexpectedly. But she found herself in a job. She had to move from Alaska back to the United States, the contiguous part, to try to be close to family, to try to take care of her kids, and take this pathetic job working in a cat food factory. And you can tell that she is not living the life that she had dreamed of as a little girl. but to have a fellow Christian there who could pray with her and encourage her meant a lot. And I could be the mask of God to a woman like that. Another summer I got to work cement pouring. These guys who had pretty much all been married and divorced, and most of them had been in jail. In fact, I think all of them had been in jail. They smoked, they cussed, they chewed, they talked about things that they wanted to do to women that you shouldn't have. And this is the group that I find myself in. I knew nothing about the job. The short story is I got kind of tricked into having this job. I was told it was going to be a computer job. So I started working with the computers there. And then the guy came in and said, I don't see any reason why I would pay you to sit around all day. So next Monday, you're going to be out with the boys. Bring a hammer and some steel-toed work boots. So I start this job with these guys who, I don't think any of them would have said they loved God, and much of their lives obviously showed that. But they got to see in me what it was like to be someone who got humiliated by his coworkers and yet tried to stand faithfully. Someone who got smacked by his boss but did not respond in anger and fight back. Someone who got concrete poured on him by the other guys just to see if I would blow my top and walk away. Because so many other guys working that job would just get fed up and they'd walk out on the job that day and say, I quit and leave. And I think they wanted to see if I would do it too. And the fact that I stuck with it the last day of my job there, when I said, hey, I have a different job, I'm going to be moving, I got a handshake from the guy who was the harshest one to me and said, it was a pleasure working with you. Because I got to be the mask of God to him. Because I got to show what it would be like to be a Christian in that kind of environment. These sorts of people that you run into, I'm not the only one who has these stories. I'm sure that plenty of people in this room can give stories of what God has walked you through and the people God has brought you into contact with. But do you choose to be the mask of God to those people? Do you choose to show them what the character of Jesus is like? Because that's what our goal is. That's what we're talking about, is that we want to be like Jesus, to show that to others so that they can see it. I wish I could tell you that every single one of those peoples in that story, that they all are now following God and that they all love Jesus. I haven't kept in contact with a lot of them. By the time I left most of those jobs, none of them had. But my job isn't to make sure that they have changed their character or changed their lives. My job is to live a life in front of them that allows God to show them himself, and then they have to make that choice. So the Jesus life step, for those who would take it. If you don't have a job, Jesus life step is this. Get a job. Be someone who's willing to work. And it doesn't mean you have to find something that pays money. Being a homemaker, I consider a job as well. Being a volunteer for things. But find some kind of work to do that's taking part in what God does. Many of you already have that. So the step for you, I would say, is this. If you have the wrong perspective that sees work as a drag, as a bad thing, change your mind to see your work as a good thing. And pray in the morning, Father, show me how to worship you in my work today. That you would see your work as worship. Some side notes that all go along with this. Some of the reasons for work are some of what work does. Here are some quick things. Number one, we work to be able to provide for ourselves. We work to be able to provide for our families. We work to be able to provide for those who are in need. And those you'll find in the 2 Thessalonians, 1 Timothy, and Ephesians, where it gives all of those. That it's not, how can I make sure I get the biggest house or the nicest clothes, but our work is also meant that we have enough left over that we can provide for other people. There are good examples of women working in the Bible. I think some people assume that the Bible is going to have this idea that men have to go out and work in the marketplace, women are only allowed to be at home, and you have to keep those gender roles separate where women don't work outside. But if you look through the Bible, in the Old Testament and the New Testament, we see examples of godly women who, yes, they do make sure to take care of their families, but they also are working jobs outside of the home and are providing in that way. If you're reading Proverbs with us for this month, Proverbs 31, you're going to see an example of a woman like that. Even further back, Rebecca was a hardworking woman. In the book of Acts, we see someone like Lydia who worked with textiles. We see Priscilla who worked with making tents, so seemed to be a construction lady in her family. So we have good examples of women working. So if you're a woman who wants to be a homemaker, there are great examples in the Bible of that, and be blessed in doing it. If you're a woman who wants to have a job also outside, there are good examples of it, and be blessed in doing it. God uses both, and they are real jobs. But for men and women, it's that same thing. For our work, we make sure to take care of ourselves, we take care of our families, and we take care of those who are in need. One good example of this in my life has been my wife, Christine. Guys, if you're looking for a woman, here's the thing. There are a lot of attractive women in this world that are not marriage material for you right now. That's not the woman you want just because she's pretty. That's not going to make it go well. The thing that stuck out to me probably first was that Christine was a hard worker. She was a good servant. So find a woman who is willing to work. You don't have to be the best at your job to be your best at your job. You don't have to be the best person at it to be your best. And what God calls of you is for you to be your best. There are some people who would say, well, all Christians should be prospering in such a way that, I mean, we should have more Christian millionaires than everything. We should have more Christians who are always at the top of every field. Jesus was a tecton. He was a worker for a while, and yet he was worshiping God in that. So don't undervalue who you are if you are not known as this world-renowned worker, but be the person who is working your best. About 10 years ago, maybe a little longer, there was a book that I read named Roaring Lambs by a guy named Bob Briner. He's a Christian. He loves the Word of God, but he worked in television. He worked with sports television and with news television, never had a job as a pastor, never wanted one. And he wrote this book that said, a big problem we have in Christianity today is that we expect the professional Christians, the pastors, the priests, the popes, the authors, we expect them to do the work for us. And he says, we normal Christians, we people who have normal jobs, are supposed to be equipped by those people, by pastors and teachers, so that we're the ones who can go out and be God's spokesman. Something that he had said that stuck out to me was that it's my firm belief that the most effective spokespersons for Jesus Christ in the public arena will have these six characteristics. These aren't taken from the Bible, just from what a guy said, but we're thinking about. He said, the people who will be the best spokesman will never ask for money on radio or television. They'll not be on the payroll of a Christian organization, but through their competence and class in their own secular profession, they'll have earned the right to be heard. They'll be an excellent communicator. They'll know and love God's word. And they'll understand that Christianity is relevant to all of life. Here's something. There are people that you will get to talk to that I won't. And you need to be that spokesperson for Christ. You need to be that mask of God for them. And I want to see more and more Christians here, whether they're seen as business people or just a regular worker, kind of like Jesus was. But they would live in such a way that when there is that guy who is threatening people with thermometers or people who are humiliating you, that instead they will see the response of Christ in every action they do. Those 18 years of Jesus' life were not worthless. They were worship. And may your life be the same.